the Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on 12-668 for our first case in the matter of the complaint of Buckeye Energy Brokers versus Palmer Energy Company. Justice Pfeiffer will not be joining us in person. He will be deliberating with us, though, on at conference. So we will start with the appellant, Mr. Yakshaw.
May it please the court, my name is Matthew Yakshaw. I'm the attorney that represents Buckeye Energy Brokers, Inc., the appellant in this case. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal of my 15 minutes. There are many issues raised in this case, but I'd like to focus on the one that is the most important, which is whether Palmer Energy Company is a natural gas supplier under 4929.20 or an electric services company, which is a power broker under revised code section 4928.08. The PUCO in its 4-1 decision said that Palmer was not a broker because they said that they were not involved in the ultimate decision-making process and entering into the contractual obligations on behalf of its clients.
Is that finding of the PUCO binding on this court?
I don't think it is, Your Honor.
Why not?
This court is the ultimate decision-maker and overseer.
But we don't find the facts. They're the fact finder.
True.
And we're only going to look at see whether or not, based on the findings that were made by that body, are supported by evidence and the decision is not contrary to law.
Well, actually, Your Honor, that's one of the items that's in dispute here.
What is in dispute? Which item?
I'm sorry.
Which item is in dispute?
They're claiming that what I'm trying to do in this appeal is to overturn the findings of fact made by the PUCO. And in fact, there was very little issue about what the facts are during this pre-certification period. The focus is really on the errors of law committed by the PUCO and how it was supposed to administer the certification statutes passed by the General Assembly.
Well, let me ask you a larger question. Buckeye is claiming this company, Palmer, was a provider or was a supplier. What is your view?
Your Honor, essentially that it's a competing broker to my client, Buckeye, only unlike Buckeye, which sought certification from day one and was certified throughout the 10-year time period, Palmer said that it was not. They said it was a consultant.
Okay. And if we agree with you, what's the impact of our decision? What happens? What's the practical result of us saying that the PUCO made a mistake and they should have held Palmer to certification, finding that they were brokers, not consultants?
Actually, the General Assembly says exactly what is supposed to happen if it turns out that upon a complaint either filed by the PUCO or by any party, which of course, or any person, which would include Buckeye, then if it's found that there has been a violation, then there's a number of things under the statute that can be done to somebody who disobeys the law.
Such as?
Such as rescinding the contracts that are in effect, such as imposing a forfeiture on them, such as awarding damages, such as suspending or revoking
damages
certification.
To whom?
I believe, to the state of Ohio or those that have been adversely affected by the conduct of the non-complying non-certifier.
And in this instance, what is the legal determination that the PUCO made that you think is wrong?
Well, because they construed the broker certification statute too narrowly. And what they've done is they basically have made a broker something much, for PUCO purposes, much more narrow than it is in any other purposes. For example, if you look at some of the other statutes where the General Assembly does define broker, they didn't do it here, but they define broker, for example, in a real estate context under 4735.01 is somebody who buys and sells and or negotiates or assists in the procuring of prospects, which is exactly what was happening here. And then there's also another definition of broker in the mortgage broker context, which is 1322.01. And there it says, if you hold yourself out as being able to assist a buyer in obtaining a mortgage, then you're a broker. So
what is it Palmer did outside of the consulting range that got them into the brokerage range?
Well, the record shows that what they did is they would go out and help governmental entities, schools, libraries.
But as a consultant, they can assist those agencies.
Well, Your Honor, that's one of our other fundamental differences with the PUCO.
You think they can't?
No, I don't think that there is such a thing as consultant status under PUCO.
Oh.
That's the fundamental difference. You don't think there's a consultant status under the PUCO, and the PUCO says there is. Is that it?
More or less, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Is the word consultant defined in the PUCO statutes at all?
No. In fact, more importantly than whether, well, actually, that's a critical point. So the General Assembly did not create or refer to or ever mention the word consultant in the statute, but here we have the PUCO going on and on about consultant status, and that does, I do want to draw the court's attention that on their decision on page 18, they said that that if you're going to be a broker and subject to their jurisdiction, you have to have activities exceeding the level of a consultant. And there's like nothing in the statute to that effect. They don't talk about consultant, and there's nothing about going above.
But are there not people who advise other entities on this very subject?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and not everybody who advises, as you said, schools and other entities, rises to the level of a broker. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Would you say that all brokers are consultants, but not all people rendering advice are brokers?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But here's
Counsel, stay with that for a second, if you would. Is it legally significant that Palmer then became a broker in 2010? Did anything change?
Well, it is legally significant in this respect, Your Honor. That's one of the things we argued was an admission against Palmer that here they are after a complaint is filed and they're being pursued, obviously, by a competitor, I'll be frank about it, and fingering one of their competitors saying, hey, we have to go through all this, and now they should have to be at this too. Well, obviously they had.
But that would not have saved them from the complaint that you're alleging at the time this activity took place. A subsequent certification would not have saved them if what you're saying is accurate, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And their reason for certification seeking was expansion of the business model.
Well, that's what they said, Your Honor. But what they were doing before they finally decided to comply with the law was the same thing that they're doing now, and that is acting in a broker status arranging. And now, to return to that question for a minute, this court, the PUCAO also went beyond what this court has determined in the past in LeGros versus Tarr, 44 Ohio State, 3rd, 1. In that case, this court talked about what is a broker in the not in a PUCO context, but in a different context. And what it said was that a broker introduces parties and also negotiates on behalf of the parties with the best interest of one of those parties. Well, guess what? That's exactly what Palmer was doing in this case. So whether you look at statutes and other contexts, whether you look at what this court has held for a broker, and then, of course, if you want to go to the dictionary definition, which I put in my brief, where it says you function as an intermediary between two or more parties in negotiating.
And there was testimony as to that between the two or more parties that were contacted and the negotiations took place. There was that evidence introduced at PUCO?
We believe so, Your Honor. It's right in the transcript. And that
Who supported that? View?
Well, we called on cross-examination the president and owner of Palmer Energy Company, and he talked about what he did, which then also brings me back to the consulting thing, because yes, it is true that consistently Palmer has said they're a consultant, but that isn't what the focus of the court should
be. But counsel, doesn't that get back to Justice O'Donnell's first question? You had a full hearing before the Public Utilities Commission. They're the people with the expertise in this area. You presented everything to them, and they said, well, we've looked at this, we've weighed this, and we've decided this is not a broker. Isn't that what happened?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
And what is the legal standard for this panel, then, to say, well, we're going to reweigh that evidence and come to a different conclusion?
Well, I would say, Your Honor, that yes, it should be reweighed because of the combination of law and the evidence that existed here.
Is this a de novo proceeding here today?
Certainly on the questions of law, because what they were doing.
I understand the questions of law, the questions of fact. Is this a de novo proceeding?
No, on questions of fact.
Do we not therefore defer to the finder of fact, which is the PUCO, in the question of fact?
Unless it's against the manifest weight of the evidence. And I guess, Your Honor, the best case I can cite to this court is the Columbus Southern Power Company case, which I cited in my brief, 2011, Ohio 1788, where this court said that the PUCO has to follow the law. They must follow the plain language of the statute. And if they don't do it, they get reversed, like any other party that doesn't, or tribunal that doesn't follow the law. Now I see my
time. Well, counsel, let me ask you, do we have to then come up with a definition or as a matter of law, there's no such thing as a consultant for the purposes of this statutory analysis? You're either a broker or you're not when you're engaging in this activity, and then remand it to the PUCO with that pronouncement from this court and have them revisit it?
No, Your Honor. What we are looking for is a determination by this court that based on the law, as it should have been interpreted and applied by the PUCO, but which they failed to do, that based upon that and looking at this record, these guys were brokers in that pre-certification period. So now it has to go back to move on to the remedy phase.
How have you been prejudiced by this determination of the PUCO? Is there evidence in the record of prejudice to your client?
Well, Your Honor, I think there is. The testimony.
What is the evidence?
The evidence can be found in the testimony of the owner of Buckeye Energy Brokers, Inc., which is Mr. Tom Bellish. So in his testimony, he talked about how, unlike Palmer, he had to incur the cost, the filing, the expense of being certified. And this is one of the things that Palmer complained about during the rulemaking phase about
Does that make him less competitive because he had to go through the certification process?
Your Honor, my client obeyed the law from day one.
All right, but let's move on to the prejudice. What's he out of pocket with regards to or opportunities lost or whatever? Isn't that the mark of what the prejudice would be here?
Yes, and I would say that the prejudice has been established in that they were knocking heads with many different customers and clients, and unfortunately Palmer was able to succeed because they had that advantage.
They had the advantage of how?
Because they were not certified.
Why does that give them an advantage not to be certified?
Because they were able to operate basically with impunity over that.
But Palmer was consulting with a government agency. They weren't delivering the services. That's what the PUCO found. They were consulting.
Well,
and then they have now subsequently become certified. So now they're true competitors. And so to go back to the way that Justice O'Neill presented it, it's already a finding by the commission that we are bound to follow.
But Your Honor, the finding was based upon an erroneous interpretation and application of the certification statute.
Well, let's get back to the prejudice. Are you saying that Palmer was able to negotiate deals, put in place arrangements that your client could not offer?
No, Your Honor. My client was able to do, actually, they were legally authorized to do everything that you can do under
everything Palmer did, you could do.
Well, we were legally authorized to do it, my client, but Palmer was not.
Okay, I'm still trying to understand the prejudice against, if you're saying that they were prejudiced because there wasn't a level playing field because your client was certified and Palmer was not. But extrapolate that. What kind of advantage did that give Palmer over your client in the dealing with the consumers?
Because it gave the consumer, or actually the various customers and clients, here's a person that apparently doesn't have to comply with all these rules and regulations, but Buckeye does. And that could make them a more alluring candidate to a unknowing marketplace.
Let me just finish this. Are you saying that Palmer was able to play fast and loose with the rules and the regulations and whatever the commodity offerings were, and your client had to walk a straighter line, and because of that, you're disadvantaged?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a good way to put it.
And was that in the evidence?
Yes, I believe that was in the testimony of my client, Mr. Thomas Bellish.
Were your services more expensive because of the certification?
I guess we'll never know that, Your Honor.
I'm just trying to find out if that's a prejudice that you're asserting, but apparently not.
We'll never know the answer to that, because the way these brokers work in the industry is they shop around the different potential suppliers. And I would assume that the same, unless they had some special in with one of the suppliers of electricity or natural gas, they probably would have got the same deal or not. But that also depends upon what are your affiliations. And that we did show that there were special affiliations between Palmer and the county commissioners and Palmer and some governmental entities, and so that might
would not have been allowed had they been certified. These relationships between Palmer and the consumers, the clients, are you saying that they were only able to develop those because they were not certified, and your client was precluded because of their certification to their disadvantage?
It's hard to say, Your Honor. that does require a certain speculation. So
no evidence to what I just laid out there.
Well, I believe there is, in the sense that Thomas Bellish, the owner of Buckeye, described in the record how his company was impacted. But I do want to point out that the statute on which the complaint was filed, that we didn't file an action against Palmer direct, okay? This was a complaint action under the PUCO statute that says any party or any person, which of course necessarily includes my client, is entitled to file this complaint. You don't have to show prejudice. The statute doesn't say if you're prejudiced, then you can file a complaint. I think anybody in the world can file that complaint. And the question is the complaint valid or not? Your Honor, I've used up my time, so I best stop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Parham.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for Mr. Howard Petrikoff, counsel on behalf of Palmer Energy. Your Honor, the primary question in this case is whether or not Palmer was acting as a broker. Broker is not a term that is defined under Title 49, but it is defined under the Commission's rules. So based upon the interpretation of its own rules and the specific facts of this case, the Commission determined that Palmer was not acting as a broker and therefore did not violate any certification statute or any of the certification rules. The Commission ultimately concluded that Palmer was not acting as a broker because, one, Palmer did not make the ultimate decisions regarding the supply of electricity and natural gas for consumers, and Palmer did not contractually obligate its clients regarding the supply of natural gas or electricity.
And is that what a broker does? The broker has to obligate their client.
Yes, Your Honor. The Commission determined it to be classified as a broker. You have to be able to be the one making the ultimate decision regarding the supply and have the ability to contractually obligate its clients. The record in the case showed that Palmer was not acting as a broker, but rather was providing consulting services for its clients, who were primarily governmental authorities. The record showed that Palmer helped local governments become certified with the Commission as governmental aggregators, and then also helped these communities meet their responsibilities of procuring electricity and natural gas for their citizens. Now, while the record showed that Palmer played an important role in assisting their clients procure energy, there was no evidence on the record that Palmer took on the primary responsibility of ensuring that electricity and natural gas would be supplied to end consumers.
Do they need to have a broker? These entities that he was advising, did they need to use a broker?
They needed to use a consultant, and that's why they used Palmer in these circumstances, because a lot of these clients were governmental agencies who did not have experience in procuring energy. So they went to Palmer for assistance in finding out how to become certified.
Are you interchanging the words need and want? Is there any requirement that they use a broker or a consultant?
There's no requirement that they hire a broker or hire a consultant.
So they didn't use Palmer as a consultant and then some other entity as a broker. They didn't use a broker at all.
No, what typically was happened was the governmental agencies would use Palmer as a consultant,
right?
And then the governmental agency would enter into a contract specifically with a supplier, a CREST provider. I think in the record, for example, First Energy Solutions was one. So the governmental entities, at the end of the day, they would enter into their own contract with the supplier.
And they were able to do that because of the orchestration of these associations or aggregates that they were able to create on the advice of Palmer?
The majority of Palmer's clients were governmental aggregations who are just essentially communities who
right.
Have to become certified with the Commission as a governmental aggregator. and then they ultimately go out and decide to buy electricity or natural gas from a supplier.
They contract directly then as an aggregate with the natural supplier?
Yes.
Okay.
Is the term consultant defined by the PUCO rules or regulations?
It is not, Your Honor. The commission.
How did the commission determine Palmer was a consultant?
The commission, based upon the specific facts of this case, looked at the activities that Palmer was engaged in to determine whether or not Palmer was just assisting communities and helping them in their responsibilities in procuring electricity or natural gas, or was Palmer actually engaged in the type of activities where they were making the ultimate decision for their clients. What they determined in this case was they weren't a broker as one who just takes the primary responsibility for ensuring that the natural gas or electricity would be delivered. They were just assisting the governmental agencies.
Are there other consultants operating at the commission level?
I'm sorry?
Are there other consultants operating at the commission level?
Their consultants do not need to be certified with the commission unless they are engaged in the type of activities that would reach a point where they are considered either a broker or a marketer. There may be certain consultants out there who, for some reason, have decided to become certified with the commission, but who needs to be certified with the commission, as the commission determined in this case, is if you're engaged in the type of activities where you're making the ultimate decision for your clients and being able to contractually obligate your clients, you need to be certified as a broker.
Council, the definitions that you're talking about, the administrative definitions,
yes,
that would be under CC, power brokerage,
yes,
and then the DD, power marketer. Those two require the certification by the PUCO, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. CC is power brokerage, and then
power marketing.
Power
I'm
marketing.
Sorry, EE would be power marketing.
Yes. And in our case, specifically deals with power brokerage, power marketing. There was no claim that they were a marketer. The only issue was whether or not they were a broker in this case, Your Honor.
What about the subsequent certification of Palmer? Does that have any bearing here?
No, Your Honor. The commission, as it discussed in its opinion and order, said that when it gets an application for certification, it's considered potential prospective activities. It is not evidence that Palmer was actually engaged in those activities. And as you indicated earlier, the commission stated in its opinion order, the focus of the case was still going to be upon whether or not Palmer was engaged in those activities prior to certification. So the commission still did an analysis of what were the actual activities of Palmer prior to certification and determined that the evidence showed that Palmer was not engaged in the activities of a broker and therefore did not need to be certified and didn't violate any of the certification rules.
What standard of review should we apply, in your view, to approaching this case?
As you indicated earlier, Your Honor, the commission's determination regarding broker Palmer not being a broker is a factual determination. So therefore, the commission should only be reversed if the appellant is able to show that their decision is against the manifest weight of evidence. There is plenty of evidence in the record that supports the commission's decision as they summarize in their opinion and order. So therefore, the commission's decision should be affirmed.
And it's only on the manifest weight on the factual question, not on the legal question? Is that before us?
Your Honor, it's the commission's position that the what is at issue here is a factual determination that the commission made after of whether or not Palmer was acting as a broker. After making that factual determination and supporting it by the record, the standard that should be applied is unless the appellant is able to show that the commission's decision was against the manifest weight of the evidence, the commission's decision should be affirmed.
So that would be a limited weighing, would it not?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That would be a limited weighing by this panel, correct?
Correct.
If there had been if the burden had been met and certification was required by Palmer, what would the PUCO then have done? Is there a penalty provision within the statute, or what would be the outcome?
It's sort of hard to speculate, Your Honor, as to, but assuming that Palmer wasn't or was acting when it should have been certified, the record in this case didn't show that anyone was harmed in the public. No one came forward from the public saying that they were not satisfied with Palmer's the activities that Palmer was engaged in. And in fact, just the opposite happened. Two individuals said that Palmer provided valuable services and testified in this case. As it relates to the remedies, as it relates to damages, appellant talked about damages under the statute. There's no one that came forward and said that they suffered any damages. Appellant sure didn't put on any type of evidence quantifying his damages. So there's nothing to support any type of forfeiture. There's nothing to support any type of damages. And the rescission of contracts, again, the appellant is not a customer of Palmer. It's not a client of Palmer. So they're talking about rescinding potentially hundreds of thousands of contracts that they're not a party to, and that no one has said that they were upset about. So they're based upon the record
counsel,
of this case.
I think the justice is asking you, you're from the Attorney General's office, correct?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay. And I think the question is, if somebody is acting as an unlicensed broker in the state of Ohio, what is the penalty from your office? Or from the PUCO, your client's office?
The PUCO has, under the statute, there is the potential for forfeitures. There is the potential for damages where damages has actually been shown. And there is the potential for rescission of contracts. I guess, Your Honor, I was just indicating that the record in this case doesn't support any of those.
Should we look to see whether the order is reasonable or lawful?
As I indicated, I believe the standard should be based upon whether or not the decision is against the manifest weight of evidence, because it's based upon a factual determination.
Does your opponent have a burden to show prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Result of that determination?
They do, Your Honor, and they have not. They haven't explained how they suffered any damages. As I indicate, they're not a customer. They're not a client of Palmer. There is an indication that they competed somehow against Palmer, but they haven't indicated how they lost out any type of business, or quantified how much business they lost or anything out of pocket. None of the remedies that they suggest, they haven't explained how any of those remedies would fix any alleged harm that it suffered. So, as a threshold matter, Your Honor, I don't think they've shown how they were prejudiced. And just to be clear, there's a distinction between whether or not one can file a complaint with the commission. The commission took the complaint, considered it, and issued an opinion and order. That's different from whether or not the appellant has a right to bring an appeal to this court.
Does your research show other cases similar to this where a party has filed a similar complaint alleging that there's been activity as a broker by a non-certified party? Has the commission ruled on that, or has this court ruled on that, or what's your research show in that field?
This is a very unique case, Your Honor. The commission has not had any other case where one broker is claiming another, or one consultant is claiming another consultant should have been certified by the commission. Yeah, thank you. And but so we have not had this type of circumstance before, but we did cite cases from this court indicating that on numerous occasions the court has held that you have to show prejudice of some type of substantial harm to your either pecuniary right or financial harm. And appellant still to this day has failed to explain how the opinion and order has harmed.
Thank you. We'll let Mr. Petrikoff.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Petrikoff, you have about 2 minutes.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I am Howard Petrikoff, and I appear today on behalf of Palmer Energy. And there are 2 points I'd like to make to the Court today. The first one is I want to take a quick look at probably the most important fact in the record that's been ignored up till now, and that is the testimony of Mr. Lee Harrington from NOPEC. NOPEC is the Northern Ohio Public Energy Council. And that's an example of this. That's 114 communities in Northeast Ohio. The services that Palmer Energy, Mr. Fry gave was to advise NOPEC how to run a public bid and to fill out all the applications that you need to be an aggregator. And basically, Mr. Harrington took the stand and told what he, as the client, what the services was that they had contracted, what they had gotten from Mr. Fry from Palmer Energy, and why they consider it to be very good services and consulting services.
Who pays Mr. Or the Palmer industry? Who pays Palmer?
Who pays Palmer? Palmer is paid by the winners of the bid.
So the energy companies, providers?
Yes, as part of the bid contract, they would pay the fee.
Okay, and who pays the an entity such as Buckeye when they're a certified entity?
Well, once again, that would depend on their contract. But generally, a broker takes a percentage of the of whatever the value of the contract is.
And that percentage is paid then by the provider, the energy provider.
The energy provider. That's correct.
Council, what difference will it make now that you have certification? What services will be allowed that were not allowed before?
None. This would have no effect. The certification as a broker would allow basically a Palmer Energy to engage in a different type of service. That's what I mean.
What is the distinction? The certification that you now have apparently is going to mean something to change you from a consultant to a broker, correct?
That's correct. If you were, if they were a broker, or when now that they are a broker, what they could do is they could go out and contact a user like a school or an industry and a supplier and say, "I'd like to bring you together. I think that you could get better service." And introduce them and get a fee for doing that. That is not the business that Palmer Energy was engaged in during the period of the complaint, 2006 to 2010. The business at that time was basically these governmental agents would come to Palmer Energy and say, you know, could you do a public bid for us? Can you help us with our the paperwork that goes with it? Can you evaluate the bids when they come in, and then the agency makes the decision?
They evaluate the bids that Palmer would evaluate the bids that come in from the various energy providers, right?
That's correct.
And then recommend to the aggregates.
They would provide an analysis. I'm sure the analysis would show that some are better than others. This is not a one variable. When you run a bid, it's not a one variable item. There's term, there's price, there's the types of services. So you would get an analysis of both, and then the agency would decide which they wanted to use. And in Mr. Harrington's testimony, he said, you know, the kind of market analysis you get from Mr. Fry, who's an engineer and a mathematician, was excellent. And I think maybe there's a key distinction here. In the supplement on page 22, you'll notice that there was one bid that went out, and I guess the when they did the analysis, he didn't like any of the bids. That's not something a broker would do. A broker's going to say, you know, I'm bringing you together for a deal. Let's not have a deal. But that's something a consultant would do, would say, you know, these are not really advantageous.
So you're not saying that a consultant is a broker light? I mean, it's not like on a continuum. Is that what you're saying, that they are really two distinct things?
That's correct. A broker is going to have going to bring a buyer and a seller together. And the commission's rules show that you have to be in the business of supplying or enabling a supplying. A consultant is there for information. You get the information, and then you as the principal, would do what you think is in your best interest.
Mr. Petrikoff, before you sit down, I want to ask you what your view is as to the legal issue before the court. I think Mr. Parham argued to us that he thought it was a manifest weight of the evidence question. How do you characterize it?
I agree. I think that the question before the court is whether the commission's factual determination that Palmer Energy is not a broker is supported by the record, and I think the record gives ample support.
And our determination is whether or not that decision is supported by sufficient evidence or whether the decision is against the manifest weight of the evidence.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Yakshaw, you've used all your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to point out two things very briefly. Number one, this is a case where Palmer itself admitted repeatedly in its website, in its applications to the PUCO, in its own letterhead that it is a broker. So that evidence is there. You can't be allowed to say you're not a broker when you're in court, when you're telling the whole world prior to that that you are. And then the last point I wanted to make in my abbreviated time is that—
What was that evidence presented to the PUCO?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
And how do we get behind the decision of the PUCO having waited? If they waited and made a determination, what do you have us do?
Well, to do—
You want us to reweigh the evidence?
On that particular score, yes. But what an admission is more than simply like a piece of evidence. That can be considered determinative against somebody.
Was that representation on their website? I seem to recall that the response was that that was— a role that that Palmer had engaged in prior to the certification process.
That's because Palmer's president would basically say anything, Your Honor. If that was true, then why in 2002 and over in their letterhead they still say they're a broker? If they're moving away, why wouldn't you take that off your letterhead? Why would you call yourself a broker on the website if in the year 2010 or 2009, when you say, oh, we haven't done that since I bought the company in 1980?
Well, I understand that, but I mean, the representation that was made for the PUCO to do the weighing and balancing on this very subject matter was testimony, and you're asking us to, as was mentioned, reweigh the testimony to come up with facts rather than accept the facts as being presented to the court, with the only standard being the manifest weight responsibility.
Well, but that's not all that's happening in this case, Your Honor. It is true that we are asking a reweighing of evidence, but we're also saying that the PUCO has incorrectly interpreted and applied the certification law, so the whole thing's messed up from the beginning. And I would like to point out this isn't like some crazy idea concocted by a Buckeye's lawyer myself. There was an actual dissenter in this case. This isn't like a 5-0 decision coming up here before the court. One of the PUCO commissioners said, yeah, you're right. But, you know, he said, no harm, no foul. But so we're talking about not a unanimous decision, but 4-1.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the matter under advisement, gentlemen. You'll be notified of our decision.